The devil with such wrath knows he has to change his strategy. And the strategy is this. I'm going after their very faith. I'm going after their homes, their marriages. I'm going to try to paralyze every spiritual man and woman on the face of the earth.
There's something in you that says, I can do more. This just can't be it. There's something in you. There's a calling on your life. But I got a saying, when life knocks you down, try and land on your back, because if you can look up, you can get up. Eye has not seen, ear has not heard, nor has entered the heart of mankind what's in store for you if you challenge yourself, if you persist and persevere.
Because real lions like to hunt. They love the process just as much as they love the prize. And some of y'all just want to score. You don't like the process. You're not in love with the process.
Well, good evening, everyone. This is Cole Davis with the Lion's Path Radio Show. Thank you for joining us once again. Last week we were off, and I'll tell you a little bit about that here in a second. I definitely want to get our announcements out of the way because we got a really important show this evening. I think we definitely need, this is the nuts and bolts of what we do as human beings, either good or bad. With the things that drive us apart are the things that bring us together. And I hope you had a wonderful Passover season. Whenever you did celebrate it, I hope that you're having a wonderful Omer counting and looking forward to Shavuot. And this next weekend, this coming, not this one, but the one after that, is United in Worship in Atlanta. You can go to unitedinworship.org. Join us there. I will be there with t-shirts, mezuzahs that I would burn myself. And, of course, teachings. You got Brad Scott. You got the Exodus Road Band. You got Mason Clover, James Block, Ed Harris, all kinds of, and many more. So I just pray that I could see you there. That'd be great. And many of my Facebook friends that I've seen and talked to a little bit are saying they're going to be there. So I'm looking forward to meeting you all in person. Godly Men of Valor, gmvevents.com, September 13th and 14th. Is GMV Indianapolis, which is actually about an hour north of Indianapolis, but still close enough, closer than I am right now. And then I want to take a moment and on behalf of the Sacred Apparel team, thank you all for your support. They have been blessed beyond measure. Continue to do that. That's a wonderful company, a wonderful family, and they do some tremendous work. They did many other things other than t-shirts that they offer as far as ministry goes. Tremendous people. The sacredapparel.net. Most of all, as far as it pertains to us, you can now buy On That Day Ministry t-shirts, and there'll be more designs to come. We've revamped some of our old designs that we've done on our t-shirt campaigns. That helps us, that helps them, that helps get the word out, and you can order those shirts. You'll see it under the men's section. You'll see On That Day Ministries t-shirts there, okay? And then, if I haven't put it out before, and I don't know why I wouldn't have, but I bet I haven't, I will be at the 2019 Raising Up the Remnant conference in December, and that is at Potosi, Missouri. If you go to raisinguptheremnant.com, you can register there. They're actually getting ready to do a giveaway for two families who, if they follow the instructions, that they can apply and register to possibly win an all-expenses vacation trip to Raising Up the Remnant. It's a vacation from your problems, right? Like, what about Bob? But that's a tremendous thing. So raisinguptheremnant.com there. So let me see here. So I apologize for last week. I just want to be vulnerable with you as I normally am. But I can tell you that last week I was at a point where I haven't been in a long time, and that was I was completely drained. For those of you who don't know, I am still working a full-time job. We have four children. We have everything going on. We have all these projects happening, travel, things of that nature. My wife has a business with doTERRA oils, and last week, I was one of those moments where I had gotten in a pattern when I was going to college a couple of years ago of you know, burning the candle at both ends, and I was completely shot, and I kind of came to a realization. The reason I'm telling you all this is actually I'm asking for your prayers and asking for your help, and I'm getting to the point now where the demands of the ministry and the full-time job are beginning to clash. I was completely wiped last week. And so I got a little time away this weekend, which was great. Got some reflective work. I asked the Father, what's the next thing you want me personally to handle? He revealed it. Once I get past it, I'll talk to you about it. And I'll kind of give you my observations and everything like that. But I got my next hurdle I need to get through. At the same time, if you go to onthatday.org, and I pray that if you can hit the donate button or the monthly support button, I don't really care how much you give. But it's very obvious the Father's moving us into full-time ministry. And right now, with my attention so divided, and I'm not as young as I used to be, I'm getting to the point now where I'm having to do things halfway in each arena, which is no way to live. And so I'm really asking for your prayers and your help. And I pray that you would consider a monthly donation, because we're getting to the point now where it's obvious the Father's moving us into full-time ministry. He's moving us away, and we're just, I'm wanting to do this full-time. It's going to be one of those things where my options are pretty much just step away from ministry or step away from the government job. Well, that's not, you know, I'm not stepping away from ministry, so it's going to happen. But when I was completely, completely shot last week, and where you don't even have emotions anymore, you have no will to move forward, you're completely empty, beyond empty, running on fumes. I just thank you for your prayers and support, because we are really, really pushing through this season, and the Father's given us the next hurdle, given us the next plan. And it was actually this teaching, I was going to do this last week, but I wouldn't have done it justice, because there was a lot of introspection I had to do for myself. Doing the study on this subject was really tough, because you're looking at when the utter evil of humanity gets put into action. And then you get the part of humanity that draws us all together. And you see pieces of yourself in both arenas. You see yourself, okay, well, I've done, you know, if you're really honest with yourself, you know, I've done poorly in that arena, and I've done really well in this arena. And I can tell you that it took a while. It hit me hard. And I found something that many of you who watch and listen regularly know. I'm not a conspiracy guy. I don't really follow that anymore. I'm not blind, however, to what's going on out there. But my focus is not on what the enemy's doing, what the government's doing. That being said, I definitely want to point this out, that I understand here, I mean, here this week of the Holocaust remembrance and everything like that, where systematic cruelty by an organization, by a government, by a people, really is what we're scared of. When we look at what the enemy's planning to do in the end, when we look at the structure of the book of Revelation and the end and all those kind of things, we're really concerned. When we worry about what the government's doing, we're worried about systematic cruelty. When a government or a kingdom or whatever it is begins to harm itself, harm its own citizens, and begin to kill, destroy, steal, whatever it may be, its own people. And I can understand that. You know, I'm not, that's what I'm saying. I'm not blind to what's happening. And that fear fuels that conspiracy thinking. And where I came to with, and you may have a different conclusion, where that fueled, you know, that fuels that conspiracy thinking, where I'm constantly on the lookout for the next threat. Well, that really becomes a spirit of fear after a while. You know, you begin looking at the world, and people call it being awake or having their eyes open. I don't really go that far. I think you might have your eyes open, but you're looking at the wrong thing. So what is cruelty? I did some research. I read a book, looked up different theories on this. Of course, this is a philosophical issue, all those type of things. When it came down to it, cruelty is the callous indifference to or pleasure in causing pain and suffering, or it is behavior that causes pain or suffering to a person or animal. And I want to make sure that you're to any sentient being that has the sense the ability to have a sense of the world around it. Okay. Now, evil is this abstract concept. We go, what is evil? Everybody's got a different definition. But the simplest definition to evil is anything that comes against life or liveliness. But really, evil stays an idea or a philosophy. It stays in the ether, the abstract realm, if you will. Yes, they have the idea of what evil is. Evil does not manifest until it becomes cruelty. Cruelty is evil put into the hands. Cruelty is the carrying out of evil's wishes and where the evil really becomes effective. It stops being theoretical and becomes an action. Now, that's kind of a scary thing. It goes from the mind. Now it's in the hands and the feet and the will. Now I am going to move forward with the evil and accomplish its desires. Jeremiah 50, verse 42. Jeremiah 50, verse 42. They lay hold of bow and spear. They are cruel and have no mercy. The sound of them is like the roaring of the sea. They ride on horses, arrayed as a man for battle against you, O daughter of Babylon. Cruelty, when it really boils down to it, cruelty is what we fear from other human beings. Cruelty is what destroys relationships. Indifference, which is the lukewarm version of cruelty, which really is an inactive cruelty, really allows cruelty to go forth. The devil is evil, but he relies on humans to carry out his cruelty. So keep that in mind. On this show, of course, we talk about demonic forces. We talk about deliverance and everything like that. All good. But really where the rubber meets the road in deliverance is us breaking our agreement and separating our will, our personal will, from the adversary's plan and our participation in his kingdom, and putting all of us on the cross and taking up our cross daily and following Yeshua. That's really where the rubber meets the road. What we do, what kingdom we hold allegiance to, is the one that we serve. The one that we serve is not, the one that we as believers serve is not one of cruelty, which is the false accusation that the world gives the Most High of the Old Testament, quote unquote, and the New Testament, the entire Bible. The accusation is that he's a cruel God. Really, the Father, when he is casting down judgment, is actually responding to cruelty most of the time. Okay? So, Proverbs 12, verse 10 talks about cruelty because he says, a righteous man takes care of his animal, but the wicked, even his compassion, is cruel. Which means that everything he does, the wicked, everything he does is actually in a form to continue on the cruelty. Psalm 71, 4 through 5 says, rescue me, O my God, from the hand of the wicked, from the grasp of the unjust and cruel man. For you, O Lord, are my hope, my trust, O Lord, from my youth. The first act of cruelty from human to human was, of course, Cain and Abel. And so one of the books I read and one of the pieces I read was actually a book called The Science of Evil by a man named Simon Baron Cohen, who is not necessarily a believer, but he is a psychologist. He's got a background. And he broke down kind of what these terms are. It was amazing to me how it showed in my own life every time that I am moving forward and not doing something. Cruelty is usually based in a lack or an erosion of empathy. See, empathy is the thing that ties us together. Simon Baron Cohen in his book, The Science of Evil, says, when empathy is switched off, we are solely in the I mode. I want this. See, cruelty flourishes when there is a removal of connection, a removal. Somebody just this evening on the comment thread was being very cruel. It's easy to be cruel when you have a wall of separation, when you don't have to witness the impact or empathize with those whom you are coming against. I thought that was kind of interesting timing there. But when it comes down to it, what you have to do first in order to be cruel is to separate yourself from the connection between you and the object of your cruelty. Laura McGuire writes this. She says, the point, and she's talking about online trolls, and everybody kind of goes, well, who cares about that? Well, when your fingers are typing communication, your fingers have become little tongues. And when you confront, when you're being intentionally cruel with your words online, you are actually following through with what the Bible says, which is the tongue is an unquenchable fire. It's that form of communication. So online trolling is not harmless, especially to the one doing it, who is being openly condemned in the scriptures for speaking these horrible things. But Laura McGuire writes this, the point of online trolling is to get a rise out of the other person. Trolls try to elicit an emotional reaction. So they are fully aware of the fact that the other person is human and has feelings. In fact, they are exploiting that fact to get their sadistic kicks. It is precisely because the victim is human that they can be made to suffer. I would love to tell you, and I think many of us, and I know I'm broadcasting on Facebook, we have to start calling out, if you will, or separating ourselves. Folks, we have some people who say some horrible things who claim to be Hebrews. I don't know if they are or not, not judging, but I can tell you, you will know them by their fruit. When we begin to separate ourselves from other people, we begin to seek either a elevated position over them, or we are removing their humanness from them. We are no longer thinking of how our words impact them, which we are expressly told to do so in the scriptures. This is where we, brothers and sisters, with our communication, have to be cautious and separate ourselves from those. And let's call it what it is. When somebody says something intentionally hurtful, they are being cruel. I've had some people who I have fellowshipped with turn around the next week and say some of the most awful things. And I said, how is that possible? Well, when we were together, there was connection. There was relationship. The second that we get apart and the separation happens and now it's a cold cyber relationship, now the awfulness comes. Simon Baron Cohen says in his book, empathy erosion happens over time. It is the loss of vision of life as valuable or humans as humans. Cruelty first has to start. In order for somebody to be cruel to another person or to an animal or whatever, you first have to only see that person as an object. Proverbs 11:17 says this, a man who is kind benefits himself, but a cruel man hurts himself. One of the ways that he hurts himself is that he's losing his ability to commune, to reach out, to relate. He's losing what we would call, when we say someone is losing their humanity, they are losing their connection with other humans. And what we can see on social media these days is people are talking to other people as objects, seeing no value. They're seeing a profile picture. They're seeing a source of entertainment, so they feel that they can say whatever they want, not regarding that there's a human being on the other side of this, whether you like them or not, just or righteous, whatever it may be. And this is the thing, is that something... when you objectify a human being, you remove their humanity from them. And this is the danger of pornography and lust, if you will, of that type, lust of that type. Because in order for it to be worldly desire like that, you have to remove the other person as a human being and simply put them as an object. You know, there's the term objectifying women. You don't just objectify women. It starts with women, but then you begin to objectify human beings. You begin to not see them. You begin to not be able to relate. There are many factors involved in the recovery from pornography. And one of them is that you begin to see people with faces again, not just body parts. you begin to see them as human beings and hear them speak and connect with them again. 1 Corinthians 6:18, kind of connected to Proverbs 11:17, when it talks about a cruel man hurts himself in Proverbs. 1 Corinthians 6:18, flee from sexual immorality. Every other sin a person commits is outside the body, but the sexually immoral person sins against his own body. Objectifying people for whether it is sexual desire or violent desire, it is all cruelty, because both of them begin with the removal and the objectification of that person, the removal of their humanness. Proverbs 12:10 says this, whoever is righteous has regard for the life of his beast, but the mercy of the wicked is cruel. It goes back to the removal of the person who, the removal of the idea that something has value, that this thing that we are dealing with has feelings and emotions or senses, understands. You know, what's amazing is animals are cruel to one another out of necessity, if you will. At the same time, human beings are cruel for absolutely no reason whatsoever. Now, there is an element of you have to objectify something. I can tell you this. One of the theories I got after this book and after doing this research was this, that there is a time, there is a, in order for you as a soldier or a warrior to accomplish your will, or accomplish the mission rather, of destroying the enemy that's coming to take everything from you, you have to, in many ways, look at that individual as not a human being anymore. You have to look at them as something that means you harm, just simply a source of danger. But I think one of the reasons that we have such a hard time in this country of reintegrating our soldiers is for so long in a war zone, they have been operating in the objectification of human beings out of necessity. But when they come home, they have to turn that off and begin to look at humanity again. And when they look at humanity again, they can't help but look back at what they were doing in the war zone and are haunted by it. Not just the danger, but the questions about it. And that made a lot of sense to me when I began studying this subject. See, when I talk about objectifying human beings, let's go into that a little bit more. Turning human beings into objects for whatever reason creates an erosion of empathy. It creates an erosion of empathy. You no longer identify with that person. They are a means to an end, which is, they're either, you know, every dictator who comes against a group of people or comes against another nation, he has to first, in the eyes and minds of the people, cast the other society, cast the other person as objects who are doing evil, who are coming to steal, whatever it may be. Now, this is a very broad definition. This is a very, of course, very tough subject. And having been a soldier, I can tell you that you have to be trained to do that job. You have to be trained to turn off that humanity. It's the issue is when you have to come home and turn it back on, all that comes flooding back in. But at the same time, when we're coming down to this, let's get more practical. Let's get more in the place where we are. And we're going to coming up on the break here in a second. But cruelty is not just coming against the life. Cruelty is causing damage just for the sake of causing damage, just being bitter and angry and nasty to another person. Causing and I don't care what you say, hurting someone's feelings is an absolute means or sign or act of cruelty. We need to quit pretending like that doesn't matter. It does. You know, that was something that social media is really coming about, is posting whatever you want, whatever sign, whatever object you want for, say, a cause. I've been coming against people who post these horrible videos and then say, we've got to bring this person to justice. Why'd you look at it at the first place? We'll be back here in a little bit. Hey, welcome back to the Lion's Path. My name is Cole Davis, broadcasting to you live from Leavenworth, Kansas. Thank you for joining us this evening. I got my dog Sully behind me, who is snoring up And I don't know if you can hear him, but he's a good boy. He's a good companion. So, but thank you all for joining us, whether you're listening on YouTube, Facebook Live, or Heber Nation Radio on the podcast or on a later broadcast. Tonight we're talking about cruelty and we're talking about empathy. Cruelty is what drives us apart and really is the most toxic fruit we have, because it's fruit in action, that negative toxic fruit in action. And then empathy is what brings us together, that bonding of the human experience. We're going to talk about a little bit cruelty a little bit more, and then we're going to talk about the empathy. It was really amazing to me when I started doing this that how much the Father hates cruelty. He hates it, absolutely hates it. And many times you see, even a lot of times in his judgment, he is still merciful to many people. Something that was deeply disturbing to me on Easter Sunday, when we had the attacks in Sri Lanka and you've had so many people, you know, in the Hebrews, I could not believe the amount of people who were calling that Yah's judgment when it was obviously an act of human cruelty. I really, you know, we are so fast to call a tragedy Yah's judgment because it makes sense to us, but that does not mean, A, that he enjoys doing it. But keep in mind, the Father does not wish that any should perish. That is not in his character. He wants all of his children, whom he loves, to come to repentance and come home to his kingdom. So when we come out and we say, you know, the Father is, and he is, he's everything he says he is in the scripture. But be very, you know, attributing human cruelty to the Father as his judgment, I would be very slow to make that connection. You know, when Notre Dame burned down, there's not much you can say about that. Thankfully, nobody, here's what you can say. Thankfully, nobody got hurt, as far as I know. I didn't hear any reports of anybody getting hurt. But I will tell you this, you know, whatever it may be, a judgment on a building, yes, be very cautious about saying something is judgment on human beings, especially when that was done at the hand of another human being. I do not believe that Abel was judged by the Father because his brother killed him. I believe that what you had Easter morning was an act of murder, which we are commanded not to do. And to attribute control over that situation to the Father as if he wanted to murder people, be very cautious about that. George Eliot says this. He says, cruelty, like every other vice, requires no motive outside of itself. It only requires opportunity. It only requires opportunity. I can tell you that we have to be very careful, human, my brothers and sisters. There is an aspect of self-righteous theological cruelty that we are engaging in that complete, and the reason I tell you this, that many of us are engaging in this body, because the comments and the words that we used about people who lost how Yeshua saw Jerusalem, as sinful as they were, we lost, even though Peter denied Yeshua and did what he did, that sin, Yeshua looked at him with compassion. Peter, do you love me? Peter, do you love me? Peter, do you love me? Brothers and sisters, let us not be a people of cruel words and cold judgment of other people. That is not going to be something that we are going to want to have on our record on the judgment day. James Anthony Froude says this, fear is the parent of cruelty. Many times when we say something, and I'm going to talk just about us for a second, us in the body. I pray that you are in the body if you're listening. Fear is the parent of cruelty. Really what it comes down to is one of the reasons that we are so cruel sometimes is we're actually really scared and we don't know what to do. So we try in that moment of fear to feel powerful over the situation or over someone else. But the Father has not given us a spirit of fear. And I know that James Anthony Froude is not scripture. However, I got to tell you, when you really think about it, many times the reason that we're cruel is the reason because we're fear. When it comes to empathy, I want to say this. One of the most simple quotes that I have ever heard about empathy is beautiful. It's by someone named Jess Lair. Empathy means your pain in my heart. Empathy means your pain in my heart. I want to change the way we say the word empathy when it relates to words around it. One thing that we cannot have is empathy for somebody. You have empathy with somebody. Empathy by nature is a connection. Empathy by nature is that moment when you begin to sit together, ponder what it means to be human together, realizing that both of you, all of us, are made in the image of Yah. We are all in the same boat on this big, massive thing called the earth, with the same standard of righteousness hanging over our heads, with the same calling on our lives, many of us have found it or not, you know. But the biggest thing about empathy is empathy creates connection. Empathy creates connection. Empathy will build community. And it's not necessarily when you see empathy, we always associate that with pain. Empathy also means that we share in the same emotion of joy, the same emotion of mourning, the same emotion of fulfillment, the same emotion of closeness and safety. Cruelty will drive a wedge right between that and begin to cause divisions. When you have someone who has truly been handed over to something, and this is very tough to say because, you know, it's a complicated issue, but I'm going to make it very simple. When it came down to it, you have people, you have the ones who have zero empathy, the extremes of people with no empathy whatsoever, according to The Science of Evil by Cohen. And they all link together by trauma in their lives. You have borderline personality disorder, folks. You have narcissists. And then you have psychopaths. All three are linked by a separation of emotional identification with other human beings. Matthew 7:12, my brothers and sisters of the Tanakh, let us be very careful about looking at other people. Matthew 7:12, so whatever you wish that others would do to you, you also do for them, for this is the Torah and the prophets. Did you hear the empathy in that statement? To join together with a common experience. I see my value. I see their value. I don't want it done to me. I'm not going to have it done to them. It was amazing to me to look at the scripture in light of the word empathy. My brothers and sisters of Hebrew who are learning Torah and the prophets, I'm going to tell you right now that if we are not building empathy for the world, instead moving away from the world and becoming more and more cruel and cold to the ones who are walking toward judgment, not delighting when we see something we call judgment when it really might just be tragedy and murder, we have missed everything the scripture says about joining together with those who are made in the image of Yah. We have to be incredibly careful that we are not walking into another cold religion that promotes itself and does not promote humanity. And I'm not talking about fallen humanity. I'm talking about the common experience of living in the house of Yah as his children, not speaking against someone made in the image of Yah, not seeking their death or murder. Romans 12:15. That is something I'm going to tell you right now that disturbs me greatly. And more than anything has caused me to take a step back and look at what this Hebrew movement or whatever you want to call it has become when we stop doing what it talks about in Romans 12:15. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. We have missed the whole point of this whole thing, of keeping Torah, the feasts of Yah, to join together in fellowship. Everybody claims they want to have fellowship with other believers. Really, what they want is validation, not relationship. Really, what they want to hear is how right we are. They want to hear their own beliefs reflected back at them. And I've been just as guilty about that as everybody else, especially in my immaturity. But if we don't take the time and empathize with people around us, we will never have fellowship and we will never have community. And the devil will always have an opportunity to come in and drive that wedge between us and insert seeds of murder and hate and doubt and lust and everything else that comes in with that. All the bad fruit, malice, anger, rage, wrath, whatever it may be. And we'll be in agreement with it because we have lost what it means to join together. Our love for one another is what we will be known by in this world. That starts with identifying each other as human beings. Ephesians 4:32, be kind to one another. You notice that's a command. Tenderhearted, forgiving one another as Elohim and Messiah forgave you. Empathy, empathy, empathy. 1 Peter 3:8, finally, all of you, having unity of mind, sympathy, brotherly love, a tender heart, and a humble mind. Brothers and sisters, we are failing miserably at that. In our culture today, oftentimes, you know, you see people becoming outraged at the images of animal cruelty. Huge outcries for justice for animals who have been mistreated. But when it comes to humans, the empathy becomes much more diminished. And from my observation, the more powerful the individual is perceived to be, the less empathy is offered to them. See, empathy requires a certain level of innocence. We're more apt to give empathy to something that cannot hurt us back or does not have the potential to have power over us back. We look at their clothes, we look at their bank account, we look at everything else, whether it's great or small, and go off of that rather than what's inside here in that soul. So you have a couple things called, you have one thing called cognitive empathy. This is from Cohen's book. Cognitive empathy understands emotion and what one feels or should feel in light of others. It means I think about how I should feel for this person. Okay? And this is what was really interesting. An observation he made was people with autism struggle with cognitive empathy relating to other people. They don't hurt other people, but get confused by other people. I thought that was really interesting, that it's not that they are malicious or intend to hurt or whatever it may be. They just are confused by people, that empathy, the cognitive empathy, rather, is suffering or lacking. Now you have what is called affective empathy. And this is where empathy motivates to action of compassion or inaction with regard to cruelty. Well, what I mean by this is, it motivates us to move. Empathy that actually pushes us over the line of, man, that was a really nice thing, to, I want to be like that, let me go out and go serve. We sit, and when it talks about inaction with regard to cruelty, turning the other cheek, inaction with a cruel act, we then do not return cruelty with cruelty. We return it with compassion and empathy. Let me see here. So one of the other things is that following orders can erode empathy. Now, we hear about orders. We hear about, you know, we immediately think soldier. We immediately think about someone who is, you know, following this line of just general things being told to them without thought. But I can tell you this, that not only that, but blindly keeping commandments without the concept of relationship can erode empathy as well. Blindly keeping commandments without the concept of relationship can erode empathy as well. So what I'm saying to you is this. The whole point of what I'm saying is, folks, if we go back into cold religion, we will no longer have empathy, but the carrying out coldly of these commandments. 1 John 3:17 says this, "But if anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, yet closes his heart against him, how does God's love abide in him?" When you see someone struggling and then have the means to ease it, meaning that you no longer have empathy for another person, you no longer have God's love. You are not using affective empathy any longer. Galatians 6, verse 2. "Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Messiah." It's amazing to me how far some of us have gotten off track with that. When I see us dividing into camps, and I'm not even talking Hebrew, Christian, whatever, I'm talking about different human beings, there do need to be healthy boundaries many times. But to cut ourselves off and to declare somebody worthless because we disagree with them theologically, we have to be so careful, brothers and sisters, about that. Because, well, this is what I've seen in the past. I come to this new faith knowledge of the word. I go and present it to someone else because we're insecure in those first couple months or maybe even that first year. And what we believe, we're starting over. And we go and reach out to somebody. And when they don't validate us, when they don't see what we've seen, rather than going, "Father, am I right?" and asking him, we immediately have to turn on them and say to them, "They are no longer part of what I am." If we were really walking after the Messiah, our fruit would be very different when it comes to the world. Our fruit would be very much different. I think that if we were really walking after the Messiah, we would not necessarily study the word as much. We would go walk it out. We would be a community, rather than wounding each other, would be healing each other's wounds. Be welcoming. 1 Corinthians 12:26, "If one member suffers, all suffer together. If one member is honored, all rejoice together." It's time to grow up, brothers and sisters. It is time to grow up and begin using empathy again for our fellow man. Because man and woman, child, whatever it may be. As I study and I counsel people, and as I study what it means to do that, and there was a little direction as far as the Father goes, as far as continuing education and things of that nature. One thing I can tell you is that every single one of us have experienced things in our lives that cause us to question the goodness of the word, the goodness of the world, the goodness of ourselves, and of course, the goodness of the Most High. Every single one of us has those pieces of hurt within us. Every single one of us has that piece of us that gets wounded and everything like that. It's what we do with it that truly matters. Whether we are going to use it and empathize with another hurting person because we understand exactly what they're going through, or we lock it away and become cold, and when we see someone else doing it, we're actually shielding ourselves from empathy because we don't want to be reminded just how wounded we were. If many of us come from backgrounds where we weren't safe to empathize, we weren't safe to be vulnerable. Every time we were vulnerable, we were trampled on. I would love to tell you emotions don't matter. They do. They matter very much. They matter incredibly much. You know why? Because the Father has them. They're part of him and they're part of us. And every time in the scriptures that we turn our back on him as Israel, it hurts him. See, understand this, that when a prophet receives a revelation from the Father, he's not necessarily just getting what the Father says. He's also getting what the Father feels. The Father is sharing his heart with that prophet. And at the time, Jeremiah was known as the weeping prophet, not because he was just emotionally weak, but because the Father had revealed something so grievous to him. He had revealed the depth of pain that he saw, that he was feeling as a result of what he saw in Jerusalem and Israel. And he's sitting there going, I cannot bear this. Jeremiah wept constantly. Understand this, that we also need to have empathy with the Father, not for him, but with him. Father, what is your heart? How do you feel about this? We see the word and we say, well, God hates that, and it enters here and stays up here. But when it really boils down to it, what does he hate about it? Most of the time you're going to find that it's cruelty. Most of the time you're going to find out it's destructive. It's either cruel toward another human being or it's cruel toward him. It kills the life and livelihood and liveliness of someone who bears his image. John 15, verse 12, of course, Yeshua, this is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. If I do nothing else right as far as keeping the commandments, folks, the calendar, whatever it may be, how to say the name, what you feel about this, what you believe about that, whatever it may be, folks, we have to start at this one. That you love one another as I have loved you. Why? Because that's what Yeshua reached out with to us first with, his love. If he reached out with a cold religion, none of us would be drawn to that. But he drew us into a family, and what keeps a family together is empathy. Philippians 2, verse 3, do nothing from rivalry or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Humility is the next step after empathy. Humility is not the lowering of oneself. Humility is the next step, which is lifting up one higher than you. I am living my life sacrificially and not just identifying and feeling what they feel, but working to make sure that they feel more important than I feel about myself. Humility, if I have humility, it's not that I think less of myself. It is that I think more of them than myself. But it has to start with empathy. That common bond in the heart and the feelings and the acceptance. Really, that's what it boils down to. Most of the things we struggle with, most of the things we suffer with, what comes against the community and what comes and brings community together is either a lack of empathy, that common bond between all of us. The common bond is not based in theology. The common bond is the fact that every single one of us are created in the Most High's image. And there are things about us that have been, the world has done to us, someone else has done to us, the cruelty has done to us, that must be renewed and rebuilt and restored and transformed. But we'll never be that vulnerable if we don't feel safe with one another and feel each other's burdens. Brothers and sisters, I think I need to read this one again. 1 Corinthians 12, 26. If one member suffers, all suffer together. If one member is honored, all rejoice together. We'll see you next week. Shalom.